So now that we have our quorum, I guess I will formally start this Riders Advisory Council meeting for July. And we'll start off with the public comment period.
We have one person signed up, Chris Barnes.
Mr. Barnes.
I might go a little long, so the entire printout is available on the table over there. Good evening. My name is Chris Barnes, also known as Fix WMATA. I want to start by saying how surprised I am to see a WMATA board member will be speaking tonight about customer relationships and values. Of course, I have no idea where that conversation will go, but let me impart some of the customer relationship and values I've seen from WMATA since the last RAC meeting a month ago. There have been at least four power loss situations at stations. The stations remained open, putting riders at risk with very little or no lighting. During these power outages, the escalator outages didn't appear on the website that disabled riders rely on when using Metro. In Silver Spring and elsewhere, we've seen WMATA employees repeatedly parking their cars on sidewalks and crosswalks, blocking wheelchair curb cuts. WMATA found itself with another PR nightmare after pulling up flowers at DuPont Circle against the wishes of a large number of riders. WMATA suddenly discovered their problems with emergency intercoms, this after we've been telling them about the problem for years, only to be ignored. WMATA has sent at least two trains down the wrong tracks. The first time was human error. The most recent time is still under investigation, each time leaving riders to backtrack on their own. It's been reported on NBC that WMATA's on-time performance numbers have improved only because the goals have been lowered, which makes WMATA look good but leaves riders with longer commutes. Washington Post op-ed had GM Sarles saying, quote, Metro's collective bargaining agreement requires him to promote bus drivers to train operators and station managers. In fact, his spokesman said, mediocre bus drivers may get promoted more quickly because, quote, we need to get you from behind the wheel, or what I like to call promotion by failure. Putting undeserving employees in positions to help riders. There's some more on social media you can read about and also about carpet. So I'll just wrap it up and say I can't wait to hear what WMATA values customer relationships from their point of view. I sure hope their version is prettier than what I've seen in the last month. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify that agenda item, it's actually going to be about the customer service pledge, which we've been talking about. That will be the primary. Yeah, fair enough. Any other public commenters? All right. Any other public commenters who did not sign up who would be interested in raising us with a speech? Okay. Seeing none. With everyone's unanimous consent, we're going to have to switch items 5 and 6 right now. Catherine Hudgens is going to be a little bit late because of the orange line issues that are taking place right now, ironically enough. But she is on her way, and we hope to have her shortly. So we're just going to switch those two items. Any problems with that? Seeing none. And we'll also move with the approval of the past meeting minutes. You've got June there. Are there any objections to approval of the meeting minutes from June? Seeing none. We'll move right along to what is now number 5, but listed on your agenda as number 6, our Title VI outreach. And we're going to welcome Deborah Corum, who's from the Metro Office of Civil Rights. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Hello. I'm Deborah Corum from Metro's office, used to be Civil Rights. Now it's Equal Opportunity and Employee Relations. That's the new name. And I'm here today to talk about the new requirements under the Federal Transit Administration's latest circular, and specifically those requirements that we want public's participation and comment on. So my purpose here really today is to inform you as well as to ask for your help and advice. Okay? So just by way of background, Title VI is a section of the Civil Rights Act. And because Metro is a recipient of federal funds, were subject to its non-discrimination provisions. Now, Title VI covers race, color, and national origin. And national origin really means language access to our services. Every 3 years, we submit a Title VI program, and our next submittal will be to FTA September 2014. So what I really want to talk to you, the next slide, please. In the latest regulations, there are certain requirements that Metro must fulfill. We have to go out to the public, we have to get their feedback and their comments. Now, there are three areas. First, there are some policy decisions we have to make. Major service change, disparate impact, and disproportionate burden. And I'm going to go into each of these in a little bit more detail. Secondly, we have to go to the public every time we do an equity analysis for a major service change or any change to our fares. Thirdly, we have to go to the public again and get comments as we prepare a formal public participation plan for Metro. And this is the first time that we'll have a formal plan for us to use when we do public outreach. So we're going to look at each of these separately. So we go to the next slide, please. Okay, we have to develop three policies I mentioned. So anytime we do an equity analysis, we have to go to the public, and we have to get board approval. The first policy that we'll develop is called the Major Service Change Policy. And that's a trigger that says, if you make this the standard, then you have to do an equity analysis to determine the impact of the change or the fare increase on minority and low-income populations. So that trigger could be, let me just give you an example. Let's say we propose to eliminate a bus line entirely. That could be a trigger, for example. Or let's say we're recommending a change that results in us losing like 10% of our current riders. So those are major changes. So that's one definition that we have to go to the public and get their comments on. There are two other policies. We have to identify a threshold for what's called disparate impact and also disproportionate burden. The disparate impact really talks about when we've had a major impact on minority populations. The disproportionate burden talks about when we've had a significant impact on low-income populations. So we plan to go to the public with those definitions sometime in August, and we plan to do this through community-based organizations. We're going to do focus groups, and we're also going to do intercept interviews, and we're going to have an online survey. We haven't really finished the entire outreach plan, but you know, these are our initial thoughts as to how we're going to do it. So any help that you could provide in recommending organizations or getting the word out, we'll make sure that you get information about the timetable and exactly what we're doing. Let's go to the next slide. All right. I mentioned earlier that any time we do a service or fare change and it's deemed to be major, then the board has to approve the Title VI equity analysis, and it has to show that we've taken into consideration public comment. So consequently, when these major changes come up, we go out to the public, we say, you know, here's the change that's being recommended. Please provide comment on it. Again, this is going out to the public. Again, we could ask for your assistance in making sure that the word gets out about these particular changes, when we're going out for public comment, and what venues we're going to use. If you look at the immediate future, we're talking about the fall Metro bus changes, and then, of course, the FY15 budget, which will be next year. Now, I mentioned earlier that Metro will be developing a public participation plan. We're kicking off the effort early September. This is a new requirement under the circular. So we're developing a formal public participation plan that addresses how we're going to engage all members of the community, but specifically those that are transit dependent, like minority, low income, LEP populations, persons with disabilities. So this plan is going to be like a toolkit that we can use within the organization for doing our public outreach. It will be part of that overall Title VI program that I mentioned. We'll be submitting to FTA in 2014 in September. But as we develop this plan, it's going to be a lot of public outreach because, you know, we have to know how to reach populations, and the best way to do it is to go and ask them. So, again, we'll be informing you guys, you know, this is what we're doing, this is going to be our schedule, so that you can help us to really try to get as much input for these plans as possible. So our next slide is just a timeline that shows our major public outreach efforts. Like I said, the two definitions, disparate impact, disproportionate benefit, and major service change, we'll be doing this summer of this year. The equity evaluation in the summer this year for Metro bus changes. For the FY15 budget, we'll be doing that sometime in 2014. And then we'll be starting in the fall with the public participation plan, and we expect that's going to be about a 9 to 12 month effort. And that's all I had. Do you have any comments or questions, suggestions?
Before we go around for questions, maybe you can just start off by just giving us a preview, if you can, of the major change criteria. If you're presenting it in August, I'd imagine you have a fairly good sense now without going into too many specifics.
I can't go into any specifics because we haven't really vetted it internally, but we'll be looking at, for major service change, span, frequency, and coverage. Those are the three that we'll be looking at. Span, frequency, and coverage.
What do you mean by span exactly?
Span would be a change, for example, a change in the service on a line by a specific amount. So let's say if the bus service runs now from 7 to 7 and we change it from 8 to 8.
Okay, so not in terms of the span of a line from one station to another, it's more a space of time.
Right. So you're reducing the amount of time, the span of time that the service is operating.
Got it.
Frequency, I think, is pretty...
Frequency of service.
Right. Coverage would mean we're changing, say, for instance, if it's Metro Bus, the number of route miles on the line within a single physical year within a certain percentage.
Sure.
Kind of the span of space.
Right. Or we may be changing, or a projected change would decrease the number of riders by a certain percentage.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, in terms of, again, before I go around, one place where I think you would be able to get at least some of the feedback that you're looking for is the RAC is organizing a series of listening sessions this year where we're going to, we've already done one in Virginia. The next one will be in Maryland, and then the third one will be in the District of Columbia. The Maryland one, I think we're maybe hoping for sometime later in the summer or, you know, early fall to do that one. So if that would help you in terms of getting the kind of feedback that you're interested in, you're more than welcome to come to those sessions and listen to what we're listening to.
That's wonderful.
And I'm sure that we also have...
Is there going to be like focus group or...
It's open to the public.
Open to the public. They can talk about whatever
they want. Talk about whatever they want. We've done it sort of... We break out into smaller groups within that. Mm-hmm. So it has sort of both a smaller focus group type setting, but with a larger group of people, if that makes sense. So, you know, if that would help you do some outreach, then we'll definitely be in touch about that.
So,
and I think our members also have good ideas about people, you know, organizations in our respective areas that would be good to partner with. So we can have them send those along if you like, or people can talk to you after, but I don't want to hold you here for the whole meeting if you don't want to stay. But we can definitely be in touch about further options for you.
Could you pass that information through Mr. Payson?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now I do want to open it up for comments. Should we just start with Debbie all the way down there? Oh, and public comment first. Yeah, we're still waiting on this Hutchins, so I don't think we need to set a limit right now. Okay. All right, yes, public commenters first, and then we will move along to...
Yes, my name is Kurt Rashke. Thank you for your presentation. I wonder if the information that you get in terms of the various venues and forms of outreach is going to be used not just for Title VI, but really throughout WMATA, because one of the common complaints from the riding public seems to be, I didn't know, whether it's that their rail station is going to be closed over the weekend, or that their bus stop is moving, or that a bus route is changing, or that there's going to be some sort of public forum or hearing or what have you. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just limited to what's required under Title VI. This is all kinds of communication. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me that it would be very valuable for this information to be sort of fed back into a global process, mm-hmm. so that it's not just used mm-hmm. for these legally required hearings, but for all mm-hmm. of the communication coming out of WMATA. Because, you know, I don't know how it is that people walk through a rail station where there's a huge banner hanging that says, you know, no rail service this weekend, and they still say, I didn't know. But there must be some other way to get through to them. Right. And, you know, if any part of the agency discovers that, I hope they share it with everyone else so that everyone, you know, benefits from that.
Right. Well, that's probably one of the purposes for developing the formal organization-wide public participation plan. And it will address all populations, not just transit-dependent, not just Title VI populations, not just EJ populations, but everyone. Yes.
Next for public comment.
Hi. Kind of along the same lines, I think it's great when you go out and you reach out for comment when there's a specific change or something that has to go to the board. Mm-hmm. How can someone from the public reach a Title VI or EEO office person in between those times when they have a concern that you're not necessarily reaching out for, that they need to contact you? What's the best way for them to do that?
If you look on WMATA.com, there is a civil rights page, and it provides contact information for our office. It also provides information about how to file a complaint, if that's what, you know, you're interested in doing. Many of the complaints or concerns that we receive also come through our customer service line. In our rail stations, we have Title VI take ones that you can get by the station manager's kiosk. On the bus, typically you'll see we have a bus card that also provides information about how to contact our office. And on the website, we also have a Title VI brochure that you can, there it is, in all those languages, yes.
So if someone does contact you, what kind of response time should they look for? Like, the next day might not be reasonable to start complaining. They haven't got back to me, but 5 business days or?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
5 business days.
At most, yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other public comments? Okay, let's start with Debbie down there.
I want to talk to Ms. Coleman. I think it's a good idea to reach a different section of people because we need to know what their concerns are and what their issues are and how we improve the service. My question, I think a two-part question. How are you be able to contact the people with disabilities? Do you know organizations you can contact them, use them as a springboard to receive information from people from mm-hmm. with a disability? Now, the organization I know of is Nationwide. You might want to ask someone who represents Metro Washington. The name of the organization is National Council for Independent Living. It's on Rhode Island Avenue Northwest.
National Council for Independent Living.
Yeah. I think they just have a conference this week or last week.
Okay, all right.
Number two, can we, the board members, to be a representative, to reach out people in our own local area where we live. I'm thinking of reaching my supervisor next time. First time I did. So next time I'm going through my Fairfax County supervisor, ask him to how I can coordinate with him in his office to pass out the survey or collect people to participate in a public forum. I'm going to do that too. So I find maybe board members to have opportunity to do that. You don't have to carry a phone deck for yourself.
Right. We definitely can give you information to pass out to direct people to the survey online, or if you can think of other, I mean, if you think paper surveys are relevant, then we could do that as well. Or we could actually do a focus group of this group if you think that would be appropriate.
Always welcome to come to us for that kind of thing. Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to ask, is there a way that you can maybe work with the federal government with the number of riders that, you know, receive the SMART benefits through the federal government? Maybe there's a way, I don't know if there's a link or something you can give to those kind of riders to be able to submit their information to you when you do your public outreach plan. Mm-hmm. I know as people are coming and going, it's very difficult to get them to complete any kind of a survey or something. You need to have them in a, you know, set place, mm-hmm. and sometimes at the desk, at the office desk, maybe if an email comes from OPM or whoever asking you, do you use Metro and would you be willing to take this survey? Maybe they'd be willing to do it.
Right. One of the ways that we will contact people to ask them to complete the survey will be through the Smart Trip database, email database. We will notify, that'll be one of the ways we'll notify people of the survey. Not only this one, but all of the public outreach that we'll be doing will be making use of that database. That's a great idea.
Thank you. Marianne?
I'm assuming what goes on in Montgomery County is similar elsewhere, but I'm on the Silver Spring Urban, no, I'm on the Silver Spring Citizens Advisory Board. And, you know, Montgomery County has 8 million advisory boards, but there are a bunch of them within different parts of the county that deal with transit issues. I found out how many when we started some of our more recent discussions about the infamous transit center. But there's an urban district advisory board. There's a transportation management, the citizens advisory board. You wouldn't necessarily need to go to each individually. What happened with that, where there was a specific focus, they have either subcommittees or they call a special meeting that's open to the public. And that's the good side, is you get people that have lots of opinions to come. The bad side is it may or may not be totally representative.
Yeah, that's true.
But they do exist all over the counties, and so there is probably some way to make use of that system to get information.
Okay, thank you. That's very good.
Thank you. Lorraine?
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
I'm sorry, Mary Lynn.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Pat? Nothing? Connor? James?
Yes.
Go for it.
First of all, Mr.
Oh.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I'm late. There's a huge convention coming to Washington tomorrow. And I have some family members coming to that convention tomorrow, and I'm just in a feverish type of activity trying to get ready for them for this huge convention, which is coming tomorrow. That being said, two quick things, and I want to do this primarily. My first question is for the record. When people from the outside look at the Office of Civil Rights Metro, the first thing they think, oh, this is the place where I go You know, if somebody's having problems on the job, you do not deal with human relations or human resources issues. Is that correct?
Me personally or my office?
Your office.
We do both.
You do?
We deal with employee issues and concerns.
Oh.
But we also deal with the public, the riding public as well.
Okay.
So we have two branches within the office of, it's now Equal Opportunity and Employee Relations. One of the branches is the diversity branch, which is diversity and compliance.
Mm-hmm.
We deal primarily with Title VI, which is the riding public.
Right.
But we also have an EEO branch, which deals primarily with Title VII,
mm-hmm.
which is discrimination in employment.
Okay. As a rider of Metrobus, one of the things that I've been hearing ad nauseum since I came to Washington was that certain bus lines don't get the type of service and consistency that they need as opposed to other bus lines. Even if you were to ride the X2, let's say the X2 marked Minnesota Avenue or even the X2 marked Lafayette Park or Square, excuse me, you would see a number of people on that bus at 12 a.m. in the morning, a number of people on a weekday. And the concern is that certain bus lines don't get the attention or the support from Metro that they need, whereas other bus lines do. Could you does that fall into your purview, and if it does or does not, and could you address that?
Mm-hmm. We've gotten that same complaint formally as the Title VI complaint. And whenever we've gotten that complaint, we've gone to bus operations, bus transportation, and we will review that particular line. A lot of times people will complain that the bus is late or the bus is a no-show. So it's usually an individual investigation for each complaint or concern that's raised. And so we address that as appropriate.
Okay.
And we do a lot of work with the bus planners in general.
Carol?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have a couple of questions. First of all, I noticed there is no gender with the Title VI. Is that accurate? In other words, so there's no requirements for sex discrimination in Title VI?
Right.
Okay.
That's covered under Title VII.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is that I think that just combining a couple of things that have been presented to us over the past few Riders Advisory Council meetings, I would say that you need to go where the people are. And I think that going to groups that are already formed is really probably the best way to get public outreach, and also going to groups that serve the target populations that you're particularly
Absolutely.
Interested in. And my last thing is, and this is also something picked up from one of our recent presentations, I think we were very surprised to find out, many of us, that a lot of the complaints come into customer service via the telephone rather than, you know, the online comment card and even the printed cards that are in the station. So I would urge you not only to use online surveys, but to find some way of using telephone or even, as someone said, capturing people in the station. Maybe, I think, I remember a long time ago, people were given, you could get a card once you came into the station and you could drop it off at the other station.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to get below the people who use smart trip cards.
Absolutely.
You know,
right.
When I say get below, not that they're beneath, but get below that level of technology
mm-hmm.
and deal with the people that might not have these things.
I agree 100%. And I will add that when we did the outreach for the Silver Line, we actually went to the rail stations, and we called them pop-ups. And so we went to the rail station. There have been times we've gone to the bus stop to provide information. So and that's why we selected the approach of going to community-based organizations, because we said we need to get out where they are, because they're not necessarily coming to our public meetings.
I just want to echo some of what Carol was saying in terms of going to where people are, I think, you know, going to the stations, going to the bus stops is a good idea, but riding the buses, riding the rails right. with these people, they got time to talk. They're not doing much else on the bus or or the train. So I just encourage you to, you know, use that transit time as much as you can. You had mentioned that you're focusing on transit-dependent people. And I think especially in the Washington area, that might be a problematic definition. I'm transit-dependent, actually, but I'm not exactly what Title VI is going for. Right. And there are a lot of people who are similarly right. situated. So I'm just definitionally, you may want to take a look at that.
I should have said transit-dependent and.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And the other thing I was thinking about is on this slide here, you're talking about, you know, using that major service change to assess the effect of fare and service changes. And I'm wondering, are you going to be using data in terms of which bus lines have seen decreased ridership, which, you know, metro rail stations have received decreased ridership? And going to Carol's point a little bit, sort of taking it one step further, I don't think you can really constrain this study to people who are current users of metro rail, metro bus. I think sometimes you're going to have to look, especially for this study, for people who have left the system. Those people are going to be harder to find, or maybe increasingly easier to find, depending on how you look at it. But I would, they are the people who are directly affected by Title VI, the people who have been effectively excluded from metro services. So I just encourage you to maybe expand your definition a little bit to include those people as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara?
I just have one quick question. So when you were giving examples of some of the major changes, major service changes, is putting in the Silver Line and then changing frequencies on Orange and Blue, is that one of the major changes that you're going to
make? That would be considered a major change, yes.
Okay.
And we actually did a Title VI equity evaluation for the Silver Line.
You've done it for not only the Silver Line, but
the Phase 1.
Okay, but also for what happens to Orange and Blue because of it?
Yes.
Okay, so you've already done that.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And Candace, all alone there on that side. It's just that she's so important. She's so intimidating that nobody wants to sit next to her.
No, I just sort of wanted to echo what Carol said earlier, basically that, you know, you sort of have to go where the people are, but I think you already know that. And I know, for example, I think pop-ups, like you mentioned, are really effective because, you know, if people feel like they can walk up and speak with someone, then they're more likely to give their feedback. At least, like in my community, I feel like people are more likely to give their feedback. So I think that that's as essential as you're changing different things with different lines and things like that. And I know also that the 16th Street buses had the same problem for a while that the X2 is now having. For a long time, the ridership was extremely high from about 11 p.m. until maybe 1 p.m. And people kept complaining and kept complaining. And then finally it got changed. It took a few months, but it did happen. So you might just have to keep pushing and pushing because ridership was really high, and now they have the double buses on 16th Street a little bit later at night. So that might be something that maybe people would want to request, you know, for later on at night. So, yeah, just I don't know.
I will just say this. We were very, very pleased with our results for the Silver Line outreach because we did go out. We went to the rail stations. We handed out information there. We went to Tyson's Corner. We went to a Vietnamese shopping center in Virginia. I forgot the name of it. But we did a lot of different types. We tried different things. And we had at our three public meetings, one of which was on a Saturday, 507 attendees. So you just have to try different things to see what's working. And that's one of the reasons we really need this public participation plan, because it'll give others in the agency that's responsible for public outreach some tools to use.
Are the results of all of these ones that you've already done posted on the website?
It's in our public involvement report, but it's not posted on the website. Maybe
so it's sort of summarized in a larger report?
Yeah.
Okay. Are those made available in some other way?
I'd have to see if I can post it on the internet.
Okay.
I'll check into that.
Or is it, are they filed with some other
federal
agency?
They're filed with the FTA, and typically I don't like to release the information, and I won't until FTA has blessed it.
Okay.
So we filed it with FTA.
Okay. All right. Any other comments before? Yes, please.
I keep forgetting. I know that for me personally and the riders in my community, do you have any upcoming events scheduled where you can include the surveys, like any fairs, any information sessions? Because for me, I don't know why, but information, fairs, events, I tend to, I'm drawn to that.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any upcoming events scheduled that you can, I mean, because that's where you're going to get the survey, a lot of survey participants.
I don't.
Or if not, if you don't have, is there
I
some way you can get one, you know, have some kind of event?
I don't know, because right now we're in the process of calling community-based organizations.
Okay.
And we're asking them, how do we best reach your population? You know, will you form a focus group for us? That's one possibility. Can we come to your on-site and do intercept interviews? Is there any events you have planned that we could attend? So it might be, but we're not finished with our calls as yet.
My place of employment, we actually deal with community-based organizations. I work with the social workers, quite a few, so I might be able to help you in that area.
Great.
No, seriously, they I mean, we can kind of like, for the graduate students, you know, kind of twist their arm, you know. No, I'm just being, they do a lot of volunteer work, and we might be able to help you in that area. Of course, I would have to get approval from the people that I work with, but I don't see them saying no if it's going to be productive.
But then we can talk.
Maybe I could just encourage RAC members, if you have any other organizations that you want to encourage Metro to reach out to, maybe just send those to me by the end of the week, and then I'll forward them along to Joan.
Thank you.
So then we can have sort of a comprehensive list. Yeah, Lorraine?
I just had an idea. Recently, last month, we had in Arlington, we had the Blues Festival. And there's always like a presentation by, from art. And they have like, you know, like with their schedules and what have you and promotional materials and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could join, you know, do something similar. Like, for example, I know that the tastes of all the different jurisdictions,
yeah,
because there's a taste of D.C.,
yeah.
Arlington. You could mm-hmm. go into those type of venues,
right.
And have somebody there, you know, and that would be helpful, because that was, as far as art was concerned, a lot of people were drawn into that wouldn't have otherwise.
Is that ARC, A-R-C?
Art is the Arlington Transit.
Oh, okay. All
so,
right. Okay.
So if Metro does something similar with obviously many jurisdictions, because there's a taste of Bethesda and the taste of Arlington and taste of D.C.
Right.
I'm thinking, you know, those type of festivals that they're all over the place during the year, if you could have some kind of presence in those,
mm-hmm.
that's a great place to have people, approach people.
Right.
Because, for example, I don't know if they're going to do it in D.C. again, but, you know, they have the festival for the Hispanic Festival and what have you. So, you know, you go to those kind of events.
We do attend some of those types of events,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Okay.
But thank you, yes, indeed.
Just one parting question. There's a map that hangs in my living room from the 20s, and it has all the streetcar lines on it. And most of those streetcar lines are now bus lines. They were just converted from one to the other. And obviously those were created prior to any sort of Title VI Civil Rights Act, anything like that. And I'm wondering basically sort of the impact of all of this. When you sit down and say, okay, maybe there's a lack of equity here, does that cause those lines to be changed, or are they so set in stone because they've been there for so long that the service might not change because of that? I'm wondering about the ultimate impact of all of this, I guess is the question.
Well, one of the things we look at broadly when we prepare the Title VI plan, you have a map of the region, so do we. And on that map, we have the demographic populations. One of the maps is simply all of the minority low-income areas shaded. Then overlaid with that is all of our service. So all of Metro service, all of the local service, so we can look at that map and we can look at coverage overall. Then we also have another similar map of our service area, and I wish I'd brought it down. I love those maps. It shows all of the ethnic populations. And again, we overlay that with our train service, our bus service, local service throughout the whole region so that you can see whether or not there's adequate coverage. And then another requirement on the Title VI, now the ones I talked with you today are just a few of the many, is that we do every 3 years a monitoring of our service overall. So we look at the whole system.
All right. Debbie, you got one more?
I don't know if any other board member have a free time to help you with this survey, but I want to let you know I'm Deborah Titus, and I live in Fairfax County. I'm free every Friday. I don't work on Friday.
Okay, thank
you.
So
maybe we can coordinate to pass our survey in Fairfax County. I can work with the supervisor's office. If you want me to.
All right. You said you're free every Friday. Debbie?
Deborah.
Are you a Deborah too or a Debbie?
Deborah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you
you
very
so
much.
Yes, thanks.
And
thanks
feel free
to
be back in contact with us as you go forward with your plan. We'll look forward to hearing further updates as you go. All right, thank you. Okay, John, do we have an ETA on our next speaker yet, or? Working on it. Okay, fair enough. We will progress down our agenda and work Ms. Hudgens in when she arrives. So, the Operations Communications Committee follow-up. Who is? Is that you? Oh, no. That's Barbara. Sorry.
Just a report that I briefly mentioned at our last monthly meeting, that in the May committee meeting for the Operations Communications Group, we had a visit. It was a really informative and enjoyable visit from a couple of fellows, Brett Tyler and Jeremy Franklin from the Customer Relations Department. You do have this in your packets. I'm not going to read every word to you. Just kind of talk a little bit about the highlights. One thing I do want to point out is that, as you know, just from your general knowledge of WMATA and from what we just heard about Title VI, there are ways for comments to get from customers to WMATA. Many ways. You know, there are focus groups, there are hearings, there are surveys that are conducted. But the focus of the presentation that we got and our focus from the committee is to understand more about the formal customer comment process, which can be a complaint, it can be a commendation, it can be whatever. So this is a recap. I'm presenting it to you, one, for your information, and two, for your feedback. For how we proceed going forward. So, you know, they made a presentation of everything to do with their organization, the staffing hours and so forth. They gave us breakdowns on the calls and service trends. Some of the surprises I want to talk about is that I think Carol just made a reference to is that I've seen those forms and I've I've filled them out or I've gone online, but two-thirds of their comments come in by phone. Their call center takes far more calls than the forms are submitted either online or by mail. Another thing that I don't know if this is a long-term thing or at least, but it's definitely the current approach and recent approach is that the team does go to extraordinary lengths to get employee-specific feedback to the employees and their managers whenever they can. I mean, sometimes they'll get very general feedback, but if they get feedback very specific about a certain station manager or bus driver or whatever, they get that. Commendations in particular also go to the employee. I'm not positive if the complaints directly go to the employee, but I know the managers do get them. And they're very, very insistent that they work very hard to try to isolate who it was that was being referred to in the comment. And then I think Carol also has commented before that we were a little surprised to hear that the station managers, who to many of us that ride the rail regularly, we think of them as they're Metro to us. They are WMATA, but they have no process for any of the verbal communications coming from them, complaints or commendations, for recording them and forwarding them. Some people we've observed, and we know that they sometimes hand them comment forms so that they can submit them, but there's no process to pass that information along. And even though it was not a surprise, it was kind of clarified in our minds that we've been talking about the things that matter to the most and the masses. It's late buses, waiting for the blue line, and the routes for the access, the metro access. So our next steps were first assembling the feedback from our own committee members, which we did, and then reporting this back to you. And we talked about the next thing is we wanted to get a little more information than what they presented to us. And they said there were numbers and trends and things available. So I welcome input from any of the committee members and anyone else on the RAC or the public on what that information that you think would be the most meaningful for us without inundating them with a request nor inundating us with volumes of data that we can't possibly absorb. So what are the things that would be good for us to hear? What statistics? And then based on all that's come before this, you know, develop some recommendations. Part of this was just information gathering, but we didn't have any particular agenda of what we wanted to accomplish, but just in the course of that discussion, several things popped up that we thought about. Nothing formal, nothing concrete, but one is that the comment form, we think a lot of people are reluctant to use it because it's not very friendly. Going online, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all, and even if you're complaining about a rail thing, you may have to give some information that doesn't even seem to apply about the date and time and whatever. So maybe it's some online, an interactive replacement system would be a wonderful thing, not that we can make that happen ourselves, but something that we would encourage. Because there's a lot of ridership beyond the 8 to 5 hours, there was talk of, you know, is that the best sort of hours? And Carol, did you say you think that that's actually changing now or has changed recently?
I think that in the metro
speaker, the microphone, sorry.
I think Carol Kissel, the CFO, I believe she announced that come October the 1st, if not sooner, they're going to extend the customer service hours 2 more hours into the evening. Does that sound like something you've heard?
It does. Currently the hours, and I apologize for not being on the mic, but currently the hours are from 6 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. and 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. On the weekend. So I'm not sure if that's it doesn't say, you know, obviously on the website here, it doesn't say if that's
I'll follow up with that.
6 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m.
Which is a much better coverage of the rush hour, the evening rush hour, than 8 to 5, certainly. Yeah. We think there is a wealth of information that gets to the station managers. If there's some way to tap into that, it'd be great. And also just, they talked about how they know they're trying to incorporate social media into their processes more, and I don't know the details of that or don't remember anyway, but I think even today there was a press release about something with about Twitter. Okay, you're laughing, so I don't know. They're splitting the feeds, but they're talking about they have one person supporting all of the social media and how they can do a much better job in incorporating social media into giving and getting feedback. So I welcome any input, and that's my recap, though.
Okay, thank you. Before we go to public comment, I'll just say a couple things that came to my mind. First of all, I'd like to see a process flow of the complaint process. Internally, how do they deal with that? I think that would be very illuminating. You know, complaints are a vital sign. That's in quarterly vital signs report. I'd like to know how they measure complaints. Is it just what they receive through the comment form, or is it a broader measure? And specifically, a lot of people these days comment through social media, through Twitter and all that. How are they capturing that, if at all, or do they have a plan to capture that? Because if they're not measuring that as part of the vital signs report, it seems to me like a huge deficit in that area.
I know it's definitely not just the comment form because of all the phone calls they get. So they did have classifications of the nature of calls, but I think they themselves would admit that the social media, they need to do more and want to do more, I believe, two-way.
Right.
You know,
I think the point is that the vital signs report is
right.
Inaccurate if it doesn't take all of that into account.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. So, public commenters? I'm sure you have absolutely nothing to say about any of this.
I know Chris just wants to tear into the whole social media thing, but I wanted to reiterate for the RAC as a whole a point that I had sort of gotten at with a question in this committee meeting, which is, there are actually two call centers. There's the customer information call center, and then there's the other call center, which is the one we're discussing here, which is where you call to complain. And customer information is for real-time issues like, where is my bus? How do I get from A to B, et cetera? And it seems to me that, and you know, since we're discussing expanding the hours of service and so on, if there was a single cross-trained staff that could deal with all types of I want to communicate with WMATA, you know, regardless of the mode of communication and regardless of the nature of the communication, you know, so that these people were able to take phone calls, respond to tweets, you know, go process emails and things that are coming in through the online form, and respond to both real-time issues, you know, here's where your bus is, here's what the disruption is, as well as, okay, we've opened up an incident for you and someone will get back to you in 5 business days. I mean, I'm not sure why that has to be 2 completely separate call centers. Maybe, you know, someone could come up with a logical justification for that. But it seems to me that if you were to combine all these staffs together, then you might be able to stretch it out and get 3 shifts out of that, and then you could actually have coverage during all of the hours that the system is open. Because there is nothing more frightening than being out there at, say, 2 in the morning when you've probably already waited a while for a bus that may only come, you know, once an hour in the overnight hours, and something happens and you can't get in touch with anyone. I mean, the goal really needs to be coverage during the entire period of time that the service is operating.
Thank you. Mr. Barnes, I presume.
Okay. I have 2 points to make real quick. If I remember correctly from the meeting, the only thing that counts towards the scorecard are phone calls, the comment cards that station managers can give you, and the web form. So if you talk to a station manager, it goes nowhere beyond that. If you talk to someone on Twitter, it goes nowhere beyond that,
right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Right.
They have put out a position. I assume they're interviewing and hoping to hire another Twitter person. That was on the career site last week. That'll be another 100K-ish position, so hopefully.
Have you applied yet?
I'm blocked, so I'm assuming that's gonna be a disqualification. The other point I wanted to make that wasn't in your recap, Barbara, was we asked about refunds for riders. And this may go more towards the Riders' Bill of Rights, but according to the WMATA tariff, unless you live more than 150 miles from the service area, you are not eligible for a refund, but you are eligible for a free ride coupon or two, something like that. So I think if we can incorporate that into a Ramada Rider Bill of Rights, and knowing that we either have to address the tariff change or we have to go with what the tariff already says and say, okay, well, we're asking for coupons. That was something I didn't see in the recap, but I think was important to note from that meeting.
Well, and I'm glad you did, because that was definitely a surprise, and I remember it as you mentioned it, but it didn't occur to me to put it in here that I was very surprised that they were not allowed to give refunds,
right.
And you know, it wasn't just a policy; it was a I don't even remember.
It was a law.
A law of some kind. So that was a surprise. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Any other comments or thoughts on this before we move on? All right. Thank you, Barbara. Oh, we do have one.
I want to ask about Ms. Barbara. Have you ever thought about bringing up some kind of, what's it called, hierarchy or process? Have you thought about suggesting the map of where the comments should be going through, to whom, and how to get there? Maybe start comments go to a station manager, or have the comments go to a WMATA office. Maybe we need to bring up some kind of hierarchy of process of the comments, where the comments go from the top.
Yeah, I think we got some insight into that, but I'm not sure it's as much as what you and what Ben have mentioned as far as wanting to understand the flow. I think it does depend to some extent on the nature of the comment, but I think that's a good request to make of them. And that's what I'm planning on doing, especially because not all of us are here, is also, I know I have all these ideas during a meeting of what I'm going to do afterwards, but hey, you know, sometimes my intentions are better than the reality. So I'm going to send an email out to the whole group and ask for the feedbacks that you can give me, additional things that you may think of on the way home tonight or whatever, so that we can get your ideas. We'd love to have them.
Lorraine?
Yeah, just something that I, the little, you know, that I remember from that meeting was that the complaints go to a central location, and from there they go, well, this is rail, so they go send it to the rail department or to the bus operations or to whoever, you know, is the person, the vision that's responsible. To some of the times, most of the times, the customer service people, they do their own follow-ups, and they deal with the situations themselves until they can close the ticket numbers. They call them ticket numbers. And in other occasions, they have to go above their, let's say, you know, over the head of somebody else or whatever. They have to go to the supervisors and what have you. And they will do that, and they will give them a set amount of time for to get a response from that department, for them to respond back so that they can get that ticket closed or what have you. And of course, it depends if whether it's rail or whatever operations or, you know, tracks or what was the issue, you know. So that's basically how they operate at the moment.
Okay, that's a good idea. That's how a lot of companies do it. Any other comments before we move on? Okay, thank you, Barbara. Appreciate it. And we'll look forward to your email soliciting follow-up. Okay, the Safety and Security Committee, do we have an update? Marianne is going to update us.
Sort
on
of, maybe. Who
and,
knows?
And Marianne has graciously offered to convene the next
Safety and Security.
That's
the update with sort of a question.
Yes.
It was an intent to have a meeting this month.
Yes.
And in my mind, since I'm the one that's trying to convene it, there is one date available. And so I want to find out if it's available to anybody.
Yeah, I believe we had previously just shifted all of the meetings by 1 week. So
that's
so
fine.
That would be
I'm
next
not
week.
Available next week. So
oh, okay.
I was going to suggest if it is to meet and I am to attend, it would have to be July 24th, which is in 2 weeks.
Okay. Any problems with that?
Operations. We meet always 2 weeks after.
Right. Well, maybe that can be our the one where we have two. One
oh,
meets
absolutely.
First, second,
absolutely.
And maybe
we
you guys.
Sure.
Can,
then we can. That's a good way to have a joint meeting. What are you doing? We'll go right. along.
Or you guys can maybe talk to each other and
yeah.
just
well, that's,
get a sense
yeah,
of.
It's 24th at
okay.
Okay.
So so.
The after.
Not midnight. I'm working on a. I'm actually getting paid to do something that's due that Friday, so I actually have to do work. Otherwise, who would care?
Well, do we have to do it on a Wednesday? Is there another day that's possible?
That until the end of July, no.
Right. 24. Candace, did you? You were.
I was just saying 7:30. Would you mind doing 7:30?
We could do. Oh, if you only have 7:30, would work.
Yeah,
okay.
So we'll do six. We can do 6:30 and
okay.
Do
going.
Okay, so we're gonna do it
7:30 on July 24th here. Topics to be determined.
Okay.
But I think we were not planning to have anybody come in. I think we had a list of what were going to be priorities that we never actually.
Right.
Made a decision on.
Sir?
As I'm just stating the obvious, when there have been back-to-back meetings, and it has been six and seven.
Oh.
Yeah, too early for a lot of people to get you here. Okay. Any other committee updates that I may be missing? Okay.
Customer service is kind of a presentation on our plans for the bus stop.
For what?
Bus stop improvements.
On the 24th?
The 24th as well.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll move on to number 9 on the agenda, which is RAC membership. Unfortunately, we have lost one other member. Patrick Delaney has had to resign from the RAC, unfortunately. So we're down yet another person. Thais Austin has also left us. We sort of knew that last time, but it was actually made formal, and we had to, you know, so we didn't. We were going to have a vote on that tonight, but that's no longer necessary. So we're going to be moving as expeditiously as possible to fill those slots.
And I will be as well.
Right, for your...
proof.
Right, exactly. So now we know why. Okay. Any comments on that before I go? Yes? What? Which one? Okay. All right. Yes.
Is there an effective date for Kyle?
Oh, yes, that's a good question, actually. Okay. We'll take you as long as you're able to stick with us. Just a simple email to Pat or to John.
No, just that the board has to appoint a replacement. And so since they don't meet in August, if you don't resign before they meet in 2 weeks, then that position will be open until September. That's so not trying to push you out, but.
No,
but can she resign?
We could do a transition meeting where you both are.
Can she resign, though, with a future effective date?
Yeah.
So that they could still discuss it.
There you go. That's a good way to do it.
So you can still be part of us in our class.
Again, we'll take you for as long as you're willing to stay. Yes. I knew you were just waiting clinging to that RAC position. Okay. Oh, James, yes, sorry.
Yeah. Question. Mr. Chairman, this is a question for you, but it's also for John. Is there a rule against advisory neighborhood commissioners being a part of the RAC?
Nope.
Yes.
Yes?
They are elected officials in the District of Columbia, therefore they are ineligible for RAC membership.
Okay.
One of the first questions I asked when I worked here in legal told me nope.
Okay. There aren't any ANCs outside of DC, so it doesn't matter.
You're saying no elected officials.
Elected officials are ineligible for membership in the RAC. According to the District of Columbia's charter, ANC commissioners are considered elected officials. In other jurisdictions, they don't have ANCs, so civic association presidents, community association, whatever, not considered elected officials, so they're eligible. So it's just really a quirk of the district structure. But they're not, ANC commissioners are not eligible.
Okay. Okay. As we wait a little longer, we'll proceed to open mic. Should we start with our erstwhile members of the public? Would it be possible to, with your gracious approval.
I have no problem being trumped by a board member.
Okay. Okay. See, you're right on time, actually. We've worked through.
Something is timely.
We've worked through the rest of our agenda, and so we've saved the best for last, or nearly last, as we've still got our open mic time. But
continue to do best.
Yes.
Well, good evening.
Yes, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time and the extraordinary effort now that you've made to come and see us. So Catherine Hudgens, you may know, former chairman of the board, still on the board now, and you are the chair of the, which committee is it again?
Customer Service
Committee. And the reason she's here tonight is to talk about this idea of a customer pledge, which is something that we've heard about from our constituents in these listening sessions. We've heard it from public commenters. We've talked about it a lot amongst ourselves in our various committees here at the full RAC as well. And the idea has really gained a lot of traction here. And it's something that we've looked at, in terms of, a lot of other transit systems do something similar. There are various models out there. But it's something that we've become very interested in and we're interested in pursuing. So I brought that up with the board chairman, and it was discussed at the quarterly meeting, which happened, unfortunately, while I was out of the country last month.
Yeah.
So Ms. Hudgens has graciously come here to discuss that with us. And from what I understand, just to sort of frame the discussion properly, we're mostly going to be talking about the process tonight in terms of how the RAC can work with the board in terms of the process of making this happen, and that we'll get to the substantive part of that, what would actually be in this survey or this pledge or whatever you want to call it a little later on. But right now we're just talking about sort of how we can work with you. Is that a fair characterization?
I think you do have the right characterization. And I want to thank your leadership members, Ms. Hammerson and Ms. Walker, who came last month to our executive committee, and we had the discussion. And as I was writing down, I thought, what an appropriate evening to talk about customer services and what the pledge are, what we might like to commit here. I thought of that. I thought, okay, who planned this one? When I got the general manager's message, I thought, okay, yeah, I believe you. It's a very important issue to have, and first of all, we want to thank the RAC for providing us the research that you've done in looking at this issue. And really, I my message is just about the process, and that one, we as the board and with the general manager agree that there's a real need for discussion in an ability to set the expectations or in some manner for our customers, recognizing that
And tonight's a good example that we have lots of challenges ahead of us in the system. A lot has been invested, a lot of work that's been done. There's a lot of good and accomplishment, but as the general manager says, we're not there yet, and we want to continue. But I think our discussion was very good with the other three members of the executive committee and the staff, in that this is an opportune time for us to step back. We've just completed the process with the approval of our strategic plan. So we have a plan to move forward. And one of the goals is customer service, maintaining a high quality service to our customers. What I think we are looking at is the best things that we've been able to do is to go out to our customers. And we talked about communication and that part. And I think what we want to do is work with staff to develop a process in which we can do that, making sure that the RAC is a part of, has a role in the process that we develop, and use the customer service committee as a format to have this public discussion and to hopefully arrive at the right tool or instrument in which we use it. What's very clear is we've seen a lot of things, and today is probably not a good time to reflect on some of them, given the stressful faces I saw on the train all for the past hour and probably a half now. But I think what we do believe is that there's a lot of work that's being done. A lot of things have been accomplished. We hope we are on the right direction of trying to get to the state of good repair and plan for the future. But much of what's been done is invisible to the customer. And on a day like today, that invisibility isn't very is a kind of piece of what is our problem, because it doesn't justify all of the work that we've been doing, because there's still a disruption and there's an interruption in people's travel. And it's a quality issue. And we, I think, as a board, our board members are in agreement with you that this discussion is very important. And they want to also see it as a discussion and to work through it. So it's really a process. Staff is going to try and work to develop some process to do some outreach of gathering data. And I think that's important. And we had a successful model, I think, with the safety issue in the safety committee that talked about incidents and those kinds of things, in which the RAC was directly involved with the discussion that we were having and how to move forward in action. And I think that's a very good model. I think it's important that we also bring in the Accessible Advisory Council Committee as well, and just try and find out what are the things that stands in the eye of the customer that will allow us to be able to assess that we're communicating well and they understand what we are promising and trying to deliver. That doesn't mean that there will be no more interruptions or any of that, but hopefully it'll give people some sense of what those interruptions mean in the whatever we call it, the pledge, the policy, and the statement that is going to be a part of it. I think that's a very it's difficult. I think your research was helpful in looking at the other properties around the country and seeing what they do, and finding what's unique about us or different about us or same about us as we go through it. So that's really it. I think we want to be on a short time frame. We want it to be able to get to the point of actually being able to produce something, and don't want to linger into next year in trying to keep this discussion going on, but really trying to produce something. So I think we are very anxious to address it, and I'll stop at that and ask if there are any questions. And
well, maybe we can just start off by, what do you perceive the role of the RAC to be in that process? And I think there's sort of two ways to go about it. We could either be sort of from the ground up, we can start with some suggestions, or we can react to the suggestions that staff and the board produce, or some hybrid of the two? How do you see it playing out?
I can't say what that specific piece will be, but let me say that I think one part the RAC has played is that you've been at the beginning of the discussion, and I think we had a good conversation, I think, last month with your leadership and in concert with the kind of discussions they were having. You know, we do want to continue that kind of discussion. Process-wise, I won't tell you exactly how. I don't think we want to come at some meeting and say, okay, here are our recommendations, tell you what you think about them. That's not where I would think the board would want to be. I think we want to be able to be engaged in the process. I would think it's a need to talk to the board first, because the board is very much in agreement that we are in agreement with what we're doing these days, but the issue on customer service and the satisfaction is not being borne out solely by the metrics that we use or the capital plan that we talk about and the like, but really it's a larger piece of trying to articulate a clear message to the public that they can translate to what's quality to them.
Would it be helpful if the RAC came up with a couple suggestions through our committee system? We have, you know, just as the board has committees, we have committees that try to parallel the boards as much as possible. Would it be welcome if the RAC came up with a series of suggestions, just as the staff is going to come up with a series of suggestions, so that the board, when it meets, can sort of meld the two together? Is that something that would work for you?
I think that's a very helpful piece. I don't see a problem with that. One of the larger pieces is making sure that we also go out to the public in a very thorough way, and that's a very important. I think it's important that they know that we really are looking for their opinions, what do we see, what do they see, how they see what ways we can do so, and then try and figure out how that data can be used to frame sure. really a longer discussion and a process then.
And I'll just do a little commercial here. As you may know, we're doing listening sessions throughout our year. We've already done one in Virginia. We're going to be doing one in Maryland and the district. And I think those are going to be opportunities for you to maybe hear some of the feedback and, you know, that's shaped a lot of our thinking on this issue, and maybe get an ability to sort of test maybe some of the assumptions that are underlying it. So I'll just, you know, you're more than welcome to attend any of those, and a board member did attend our previous one, so
right,
I think it's
right,
could
I
be
think
useful.
Mary Hines.
So I don't want to monopolize the mic here, but I want to open it up to any other members of the RAC, and we'll go to public comment in just a second, but I wanted to get RAC members any thoughts on the process. Marianne?
It's not so much a thought as I didn't quite understand the timeline. You said you wanted to do something quickly by the end of the year.
We had a discussion at on the 27th. I think there was some follow-up discussion internally with staff, and hopefully we're talking about a time frame near the end of the year, October time frame of something like that, but I don't want to put that in stone at this point, because I think we want a process that's thorough, and but I think we don't want to make it a long just discussion. Yeah. I think we really want to be able to. There's no debate about there is a need for something, and the question is, what is it that we're trying to construct?
I think that also fits with, you know, the RAC has a natural turnover at the end of the year as well, as people's terms retire or expire. So I think that's a good idea time frame wise. Any other members of the RAC have any comments? Debbie?
Hello, Ms. Catherine. I'm Deborah Titer from Fairfax County. I would like to work with my district supervisor, Jeffrey McKay,
yes.
to see what we can do to encourage the public to participate. And also, I would like to work with the Fairfax County Social Services to that they have a daily interaction and contact with a customer coming in. Maybe that's something we can encourage them to participate in the public forum.
I appreciate you offering that because I think that is a way. And I will tell you another part of this that I think is important is that when we have had others of these community outreaches, we've not gone deep into what will be our new part of what is Metro service delivery. And that's very important. Many of those folks are customers now, and I'm speaking of the Silver Line that comes online the end of the year, the beginning of the year. And so many of them are already customers, and some will be new. But I think it is important because I think it not only speaks to a process, I think it speaks to a value system that we really believe that we need some sort of customer commitment and expectations defined, and we are engaging our public because it's important, and therefore that's the value system we want to be echoed in the process. So that's it. And particularly, as I noted, I said I think having both the RAC and the AAC involved, because I think that's the breadth of our customer base.
James?
One general question. When you talk about Maryland and Metro, for the most part, you're talking about Inner Beltway. As you know, growth in both Prince George's County and in Montgomery County is occurring outside the Beltway. You have transportation issues in places such as Germantown in terms of getting to downtown Washington. And in Prince George's County, you go to all the way to Brandywine, almost to Charles County. And by the way, Metro does not service Charles County yet. Is there a way to incorporate customer service and values in terms of reaching those potential riders or riders of Metro or customers of Metro?
Interesting question. I think it is. You talked about the Interbeltway, and I think that's one that I think is really important that we should pay very close attention to, because often these aren't the folks that have time to either get on Twitter, do all these other things, or to come and sit in a meeting. So what are the best tools in order to reach out and be inclusive? And I think that's one that's a constant working piece with us at Metro. I think it's also an opportunity to use the RAC to help us with that, because I think we want to frame anything that comes out of this as something that articulates the breadth of the customer base viewpoint of what the expectations are. Expectations of the Dulles Corridor is going to be different than, and I can just take my own, outside of Route 7 Skyline area in Colmar. So we provide services there. It's a different population of folks that we serve. We serve a different one in the Dulles Corridor, but everybody has a stake in this as to the value that they place on it. So I think using as many tools, I think the response of using the social service agencies and the disability service groups, using there's another part that is part of this, because I think part of, to me, some form of a customer service piece is a partnership piece, that is the rider. I think Ms. Walker talked about that last time, the rider's commitment and the authority's commitment. And so I think I often think that we leave out young people a lot, and we need to include that in some of that. It may not need to be in the same vein that we do this, but the board has talked a lot about in different time frames about how do we make certain that young long-term future riders of Metro are engaged in a way to have an understanding of the value of it and to understand what helps to maintain quality of it.
Patricia? Already answered the question.
Thank you for coming. Patricia Cannon from, and I represent the D.C. area for RAC. You answered the main question that I had, because if I heard you correctly, you mentioned that the pledge was tied into your strategic goals or plans, and it sounded like the RAC would, if we made contributions that we needed, it definitely ties into the mission statement, but more importantly, you said social service, and that was what I was going to ask you, and you did touch base on that. But so you answered my question by way of answering Mr. Wright's question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And let me just add a little bit. I think it's the third goal, coming up with the strategic plan, and that talks about it. And I think what this does is sort of puts some meat on the bones of what that goal is about. Yeah. Candace?
Hi. I just have a quick question. I understand, you know, the purpose of a customer pledge and, you know, making people feel as though, you know, Metro is going to live up to, you know, what's written down, what happens. But what then happens if Metro, I guess I don't know if we've gotten there yet, what happens if, you know, you have this pledge and a customer feels like Metro hasn't lived up to that, like a certain part of the pledge? What's the customer's recourse? What can the customer do? Because right now, I think that's where a lot of people get frustrated, is that, you know, they ride Metro, something goes wrong, they call the customer complaint line. Sometimes things are resolved, sometimes they're not. So it's just a lot of, okay, we're going to do this customer pledge, but what, I guess, I sort of understand the goal, but I don't fully, I guess.
Your question is actually is what the task ahead of us is, really, because I think while we say we want to provide quality service and be responsive to our customers, how does that play out in terms of, and I think you used a very good example, an incident or something that occurs. We have a lot of metrics that we use in terms of how we measure the progress of a system. And we have measurements about our customer input or our customer, our feedback in terms of customers. But I don't think it's articulated clearly as to what does that all mean? What how might I measure tonight's experience and say what? I don't know what I would say. And I think that's really the work that has to be done. I think that's the work that has to be done. And I think in trying to define that what it is, I think it answers then the other side of the question of what happens on an experience like that's not a satisfactory experience. It was an interesting discussion about whether or not there are refunds or that kind of thing. I don't think that may not be, and I don't think that's the key part of it. I think the key part of it is being able to articulate something that then alerts us that we really are delivering or not delivering quality service, and then there are actions that come with that. That's the really important part. That to me is really the work that has to be done, and I think that's why going out to the public, by looking at the data, by talking with the advisory groups in the community and the board. Now, what does this look like? What kind of a statement can we make? And that statement stands for us in meeting what we consider that goal that we have set.
Thank you. I don't want to leave out our public commenters, so let's have that period now.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Chris Barnes. First of all, I want to thank you for taking a train here tonight. From what I understand, that's a rare event for board members.
I won't interrupt you.
You mentioned Twitter. What is your Twitter account name?
My Twitter account is, it's Kathy Hudgens. It's Kathy Hudgens.
Okay. I
beg your pardon?
You don't mind if I follow you, do you?
No, I'll make sure that I give you the right
okay.
You're welcome to follow.
Are you aware of the level of outrage and anger by the rider population as a board member? And if so, how you mentioned rider outreach. How exactly are you reaching out to riders beyond this 21-member group and the four of us from the public that show up every month? How are you specifically reaching the riders of Virginia?
Well, may I answer some of your questions in sequence? I heard your,
sure.
Well, let me answer your question there first. I serve on the Metro Board, and I serve on the Metro Board by virtue of being a member of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, serve on the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. And one of the ways that I reach out to customers in Virginia in that is multiple ways. I have a transportation advisory group, and it's a district-wide advisory group, and we gather information from that. I communicate with people. I share. I have a communication link that I have as a almost a, every other week, not on a daily basis, but relative to the issues that we address that are relative to transit and transportation and Metro included in that. So that's one of the ways that we reach out, and that's how we respond and try and address and hear what the concerns are for the community. I do tell you that I do ride Metro. I ride Metro as much as any other user that considers it its primary source. I will be on it tomorrow night as well, and I use it to meet my travel needs where it's personal, whether it's social, whether it's work. And I do so because it truly is my best alternative of transportation around. I was not only delayed by Metro, I was delayed by the congestion getting to the transit piece that I use. So that's it. I'm fortunate to have two bus stops within walking distance of my front door, so I'm very comfortable with the system. And I think it is an asset to our region and to the community that I serve. You said something else, I think I asked you.
Let me rephrase, I guess, that question. If I'm a resident of Northern Virginia, mm-hmm. As I used to be, how would I be able to reach out to you about my concerns for Metro?
Through my email address. I think we have one that comes in here at Metro as well. As
I tried that, and I got a reply from Lynn Bowersox.
Everybody else in Northern Virginia knows mine, and it's catherine.hudgens@fairfaxcounty.gov. So,
okay, great. It'd be great if you could get that added to the website so people can have that readily available. My last point to you, as far as reaching out to riders, and I consider social media from Metro to be an extension of the board reaching out to riders, and I have to let you know it's failing miserably failing. Today there was another example of how they just don't know what they're doing. People are fed up with it, and we're all asking for change. So anything you can do as a board member to communicate that would be helpful.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Any other public comments? Sir.
Yes, my name is Kurt Rashke. First of all, Ms. Hudgens, thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for taking Metro. As far as, and I know we are a long ways off from sort of defining the specific parameters of what this pledge to customers or what have you will actually look like, but I would say as sort of one of the guiding principles going into that and sort of feeding off of what Chris has said, it seems like in large part what the riders are looking for is for WMATA to step up. You know, the goal should not just be to sort of document and publicly document what might already be internal policies and say, you know, these are the things we strive for, but really to bring that up to a higher level, because we've had a number of incidents, and you know, communication is a huge part of it, but it's also things like the attitudes of station managers, the availability of shuttles, and I understand there's a lot of complexity in that. You have to pull buses off the road, et cetera, et cetera. But when there is a major incident, people are looking for a better, faster response. They're looking for just the appearance of a more competent response than what they see today. And so I think the goal has to be not just to sort of document for people, you know, these are our policies, but to actually say, okay, you know, we're going to step up our game. This is what we're going to do for you, and here's how it's different from what we've done in the past. Because that seems to be another sort of part of the problem is that people don't hear sort of the follow-up. People don't hear, you know, we had a major failure and this is why. And refunds are also sort of a part of that. Obviously, the tariff prohibits cash refunds for people who live within 150 miles, which is something we discussed earlier. And it would be great to look at changing that because people love cash. But, you know, Ben, can I get 30 seconds? A little bit more to that. I mean, it's not just people love cash, but it's just the free ride coupon thing just seems like a lot of hoops to jump through, whereas if, and the technology is there to do this, if WMATA just says, you know what, if you were traveling on this stretch of the orange line, you're going to get a refund on your smart trip card automatically. I mean, that just makes it so much simpler. And that's the kind of goodwill, where if you put that in a rider's bill of rights that says, look, if you're delayed more than this amount of time, you get an automatic refund. That's the sort of thing where, and that would be an improvement over what we have today. You know, so as I said, you know, instead of just documenting what we have today, really stepping up and going to another level and saying we're going to do better for the riding public.
I appreciate those comments, and I do think that what we're trying to see is the results of an improved service, not just the fact that we can say it is or isn't a good quality service, but what is the improvement that follows. And I think that that is what we'd like to see, and I think that's, to me, the work that's in front of us. I think I hope we wouldn't think of it as just a way of documenting the fact that we should be a high-quality system, but that we consider quality as something measurable and should be able to be reflected on by the results that come out of those measurements. So I think we do have a lot to do, and I don't think we want to not acknowledge that part.
Any other public comments? Yes.
Kind of the strong program. I want to thank you for providing value to the riders. I mean, I think, as you know, I'm aware that I would imagine that, you know, road riders are down. So mm-hmm. I think it could be an effort on the board's part to try to stem that, to try to stop that and maybe turn things around. I, myself, used to be a mentor of road rider. I no longer ride. I got kind of fed up with the cost, the delays, and then it just seems like I continually saw from the response from WMATA for things would be that they would say they were going to do something. So, for instance, you know, a few months ago we had the green line and we were the self evacuation, and WMATA came out and said, well, we're going to, our response to that will be different than the future. Tonight is a good example of something similar happening again. We had very extensive delays, and I, we've been noticing on Twitter all night that there's complaints of a lack of communication. What's going on? What, you know, how long are we going to be here? What's going to happen? How can we get around this? It's a very similar situation to the Green Line incident a few months ago. WMATA said that it was going to be handled differently. There's really no change. And for me, it was the intercom issue. You know, after the Red Line incident, where people, you know, people's lives were lost, this was an issue that was known about. And for 4 years, nothing happened. It took a fight. It took multiple news coverage to get WMATA to do anything about it. So it just seems that time and time again, there's a sort of a hope on that, where things come up and it's like, well, we'll do it different next time. But then there's no real follow-up. And I just was wondering, it's sort of, we would touch on it with issues tonight, but is there anything that we can do to keep these things going? It seems like things continually keep falling to the crack, or falling to the crack. And I'm hoping that maybe this can be, you know, a bill of rights is one step in the right direction, but is there anything else that we can do as a public and as a RAC to try to help these things from continuing?
I think the communication part is the part that, well, let me, I feel the incidents and or disruptions are critically important, that we're running a system and we want it to be a high-quality system and therefore want to set some expectations and have the outcomes that really reflect that statement. But I do think the communication piece, and I think there is the staff view that the communication works, but I work in a legislative office, so I know when, if no matter what you say, if the customer or the constituent doesn't feel that it's you're communicating, you're not communicating. And I think that really is the attitude that we have to take. No matter how hard we work at it, we've got to be able to do so in a way that the customer has its vehicle of recognizing that they're communicating with us. And that sometimes takes a lot of reflection and looking differently at how we're going to communicate. But I think also to be able to use the ideas of others to ensure that that is what we can accomplish. It cannot be beyond our ability to do so. And I really think that the conversation of the board is that, you know, we have to, I'll take the, I think it was the Green Line where the evacuation, I'm trying to remember exact one, we had this conversation and we were saying, we understand that these incidents happen. We understand the challenges of this system. We understand the rebuilding of this system. But with all of the investment and work that we're doing, we also want to be able to say, well, when that incident happens, what is it that we can point to say that the rebuilding and the work and the like, whether it's safety, culture, whatever, is actually panning out? And that's a communication piece that we've, you know, a lot of what we experience, we don't have a chance to see it visibly with our eyes, that the work behind the scene that's been going on, why it happened. I don't know what it was happened tonight, but all I know is that I was sitting there, I was delayed, people were, I have to say, it was a very peaceful car that I was in. I was amazed how long we all sat in places, and it was no disruption, no, we heard a couple of comments along the way, but I did internalize the fact, okay, now what did the customer think about us this time? And I think that's an important piece that we want to know. What are we going to do to avoid these, and how are we going to communicate the investigation into the intercoms, that piece that's going forward, and talking about that, what happened there? The board saying just to know what happened there. And I mean not the fact that it was not, there's been communication to us as an authority, but what happened in the process of all of the complaints and the concerns that were raised and the actual operational aspect to identify that as a problem. But whatever we come out of that, it has to be a communication piece that helps to build credibility and better relationships with our customers.
That's what I did. And just to follow on, I mean, especially when you're waiting there for, you know, the time, the minutes add up, you know, 30 minutes, 50 minutes, just a little communication can go a long way. You just know what's going on.
I agree. I was about to beat myself up because I thought I left very early, and I thought, so there we go. So I should have planned to go a little bit earlier, but it didn't matter how early I left. I would have been stuck at the same place unless I'd left at 4:30. But I think we really, I've said it, I really think the board and the general manager hear what you're saying, and the question is how do we get through a process to come up with something that articulates what you're saying, and also to ensure that what we say we're doing and the improvements are working, and how to help the public understand where we are in this and what part of that plays into this larger commitment that we make.
All right. Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is practice Zen and the art of metro maintenance, as it were. Any other public comments before we're done? All right. Well, first of all, I just want to thank you once again just for your public service in general, for your service. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed Pat over there.
That's okay.
Got to pipe up.
I know. Sorry. I was just trying to get my thoughts together for Ms. Hudgens. I'm really thankful that you're here today. And I'm representing Fairfax County. My name is Pat Jackson. And there's a question that I've been wanting to ask a Fairfax, you know, representative on the board since I've been here. How in the world did they convince you guys who represent Fairfax County to vote for the injustice being done to Blue Line riders in your area? I mean, how did they get you to say okay to that?
Rush Plus is a very difficult piece. Mr. McKay comes from the blue line. I come from the orange line. I think we didn't have a battle between the two of us in saying that I gained, you may have lost. I think it's difficult. I haven't taken my ride. I will take a ride tomorrow. Oh, no, that's not true. This will be the second time I've gone in that direction on the blue line since the Rush Plus. And so I haven't been able to experience it in the same way. But the question, I think, that's been a part of the discussion on the Virginia side is what can we do to balance the changes that have been made in order for the Orange Line to function better, as well as for the Silver Line to function. And it should not have been a net loss to anyone, and surely wasn't intended to be seen as a net loss. It is preparing the system to use the tunnels efficiently, but also, and this may be the problem, and this is a communication piece, the ability to try and ask the rider to change its riding pattern on what the staff and the authority may feel is an equally convenient ride. And that's the use of the yellow line transfer and the like. And I can see your face and you say, why are you asking me to transfer? Since I already have my route, I know where I'm going. And that's difficult. I have to say, we've been working for the entire year that we did Rush Plus to come up with, is there a bus bridging option that will help? And I think we came to an answer that no, that's not it. And I think it's because the system of the blue line has existed, and that's the way people travel. I think from a technical standpoint, if you look and say, well, if you're going toward the red line area, you can make it just as well by taking the yellow line train and getting across and getting back around. Maybe the work hasn't been done. I don't know. The staff believes that it can work, but the communication of it. But I think it's going to take a little bit more work to figure out what it is. And I'm anxious to experience it because I can't. I've tried to get it in my head. I know Ms. Hines is very involved in it. Because she has that side of Arlington, and so does Ms. McKay. And so trying to figure out what's the solution, because this is an example of truly what we are talking about in the strategic plan, about planning for the future. We have grown capacity-wise, even though we are losing riderships now, we've grown capacity-wise over the growth of the core system. We have a lot of people coming on the orange and also on the blue line, or using the blue line in a different way. And so right now, as we get ready for an extension, we want all of that to work well. And so I think the blue line piece is still going to be a discussion, trying to figure out how best we can make those who become accustomed to that ride as best as possible. And I'm not certain if it's extra, if there can be, and I think we've kind of talked about this, can there be extra trains? It's difficult because you're really alternating trains on the different lines through the same tunnel. And that's difficult. I know it's not the best answer for you on your side, but I have to go that way tomorrow night, so I'm going to find out if I get in at the right time of the rush to see what it feels like.
All right. Thank you once again.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank
We're looking forward to the start of a beautiful relationship, I hope, on this particular topic. We're very much looking forward to working with your committee and the board and Metro staff as well to come up with something that really benefits riders and that riders have come to us and asked for. So I do just want to put in one small plug before I go. And we've been talking a lot about the service pledge, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of regular riding. But there is a special piece now that I think we may want to think about considering separately, and that is track work. And what are the expectations of customers in the track work environment? I think that might be a separate discussion from what we're talking about here. And I just encourage you, you know, I think we saw in the general manager's op-ed a very positive step forward, a small step forward, but a step forward nonetheless, in that he set the prospective end date of major track work. It's 2017. That's a long way away. I counted it out today. That's 186 weekends from now. We have 186 weekends of track work between now and 2017. That's a lot of track work. And I just encourage the board to think about interim steps between now and then, milestones that customers can use to judge progress on all of that. And maybe wrap that a little bit into this discussion.
I think it will come into that discussion because it to me it's that drives the discussion. While we would want to do this anyway, but because of what we're doing now, we desperately need to come up with a way to articulate that. And I think that's the piece the general manager has talked a lot about, and the board, and incrementally getting there. For example, the system where we can now get, if there's a delay on the train, not like tonight, but the delay on the train, which we know based on track work, you don't get an interruption after you get on your train. And maybe there's some things that we're going to think about, that how do we free up a couple weekends out of the year or whatever to keep doing. But I do think it is part of the larger
Or things
discussion.
Like completing a complete line and then announcing the opening of, you know, end of track work on a certain line, something like that.
I think we've missed some of that in our communication because, you know, we've done we've done some major station pieces, and we don't do ribbon cuttings, as he said, on them.
Yeah.
And maybe we should do a ribbon cutting on it, even though we're not just opening something, but we have finished a lot of
work.
There
you go.
And the customer can then see
some of
that.
We can follow that.
Follow us.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thank you so much.
I won't hold you any longer. Thank you.
And us the same. Okay, so we're coming to the end of our meeting here. We've got a big 2 minutes left for open mic. So let's resume where we were before with open mic. Mr. Rashke, enlighten us.
I'll be brief with this one. Some of you may have seen this as part of the continued effort to get people to switch to Smart Trip. There are these new stickers going down on the floors of Metro Rail stations in front of the Smart Trip dispensers. They read, and I quote, "Move up to the hard stuff. Save a buck every trip," end quote. It has been suggested that the use of drug innuendo in a city that had and has a drug problem is probably inappropriate. Ben, I see you smiling.
The reason I'm smiling is because this is not a new issue in the District of Columbia. I'll remind you that the area just south of DuPont Circle is called the Golden Triangle. The Golden Triangle being the main area between, Laos, Burma, and Thailand, where most of the world's cocaine comes from. Heroin. So I find that label incredibly ironic. Anyway, just saying.
All I'm saying is let's not fan the flames. I mean, this is one of those things where it's like someone designed it, someone vetted it, someone approved the budget for it, and now people are...
Right, mocking it, yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Any other public comments? Sir.
I'll make it brief as well. I'm a little concerned about the RAC. We missed several subcommittee meetings last month. You guys are down, from my count, 4 members now after a couple. I thought we were doing really good the first half of this year. I know myself and Kurt agree that you guys were kicking some tail and we were happy with what we were seeing on the RAC. And I just have to say I'm a little concerned about where things are going, and I hope what I'm seeing isn't a trend. I hope you guys can pull it back together through all this. Thank you.
We'll do our best. Any others for open mic before we adjourn? Sir.
Very quickly. Mr. Chairman, John Loyal, we had an excellent speaker several months ago that talked about the future of Metro 2025, Metro 2040. Along with that package, and let me just say that I'm a frustrated demographer, we have to think about who will be in the Washington area in 2025, 2040. And we have to, you know, metro officials may need to, you know, as they plan and move forward in terms of what, you know, in terms of demographics, how metro can benefit from that. I'm still in the thought processes of this particular thing I'm going to present to you and to John. But a demographic piece, I think, is in order in terms of income, in terms of economic status, and you know, all that other stuff. Just want to let you know.
Okay. We'll look forward to that. All right. Barring any other comments, public or private, we will adjourn this meeting. See you all in August, if not before, at one of our committee meetings.